Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hey, and welcome to Serious Issues, a comic book podcast where one man, me, Andrew Levin, sits down and talks about comic books until he has to leave in half an hour to go pick up his son from school. Let's see what we can do today. All the comics I'm about to talk about today came from King's Comics, which you can find on George Street in Sydney if you want to go there in the flesh, or at kingscomics.com. Big up Kings for providing us with all the comics that we've been talking about on the podcast over the years. Today, those comic books include comics from Marvel, Image, DC, Dark Horse, and other publishers. I have some local varieties, some manga as well. We're going to be doing a big talk about the current direction of the X-Men books in the hands of Jonathan Hickman. I know a lot of you are very excitedly reading that each week, but we kick off every episode of Serious Issues with a segment called First Things First, in which I go through all of the last few weeks' worth of First Issues, the brand new series that started over the last month. And I'm going to kick things off with Absolute Carnage, a behemoth of a book, a $7.99 big thick triple issue. It's a thick boy, and it's been written by Donnie Cates with art by Ryan Stegman, JP Mayer, and Frank Martin. Of course, Donnie Cates and Ryan Stegman have been the ones in charge of the last year of Venom comics. And when I started reading those, I believe I prefaced my first review by saying, "Now I'm not normally a Venom guy." And that goes tenfold for me being a Carnage guy. That's a character that I have never, ever had any affinity or desire to read before. I liked what Cates is doing with Venom. I kind of fell off a couple of months ago. And I'm a massive fan of Stegman's art. So I was interested to see what they do with this character. Carnage is like, what if a serial killer bonded with the symbiote that, you know, Eddie Brock bonds with? You know, Eddie Brock's just a run-of-the-mill thug. But what about one of the most dangerous serial killers in the world? What if they bonded with the symbiote and got magical powers? What would happen? Well, normally what happens is really, really edgy, gross comics that I never read. But in this case, it's quite a fun, beautifully drawn story that sees Eddie Brock and, of course, Venom, plus Eddie Brock's son and Spider-Man and the Maker, the Ultimate Universe's Reed Richards, team up to take down a superpowered Carnage, who is kind of linked to the original. Donny Cates has been doing in his Venom run that the symbiote originally came from like this guy called Null, who is this like, you know, many, many, many year old god thing that has like a planet full of symbiotes. He's currently he's actually been a recent character in Donny Cates' Silver Surfer Black run, which I'll be talking about later in the episode. But anyway, so whatever. Fucking Carnage, old Cletus, and you have to read every single line of dialogue in a reluctant Woody Harrelson voice. Cletus is extremely powerful, and he's breaking into a prison. He's going to try and get what's his name? Old sausage hair, Norman, it's gone. Normally Green Goblin, well, whatever his name is. Green Goblin, whatever the Norman's last name is. I'm sure everyone knows it. Today, apparently, I don't. But yeah, it's a fun kind of like team up between Spidey and Venom to try and take down Carnage before he bonds with the Green Goblin. But he's not. Norman has not been the Green Goblin recently. I guess when we last saw him, he was Carnage. So whatever. It's confusing. It's beautifully drawn. It's a lot of great action. Ryan Stegman draws the hell out of a symbiote fight, especially when there's like 10 symbiote-powered beings and a spider just thwipping and thwapping all over the place. Do I really care what happens next? Not really, but I did enjoy reading all $7.99 worth of this first issue of Absolute Carnage. And I hope you did too. Marvel also put out a book that I wasn't sure about because this is a character that I have even less experience with than Carnage. We've got a new series of Death's Head. And Death's Head is like a space hitman, a space assassin, but he's a robot. And I guess he has like punk rock roots, certainly British roots in Marvel Comics. And we get a new series written by Tini Howard with art by Kay Zama and Philippe Sobrero. And I was like, okay, cool. You know, this is going to be like a pretty funny robot musical comic. That actually sounds great. But was taken aback because the kind of main characters of this comic, it's not actually Death's Head, this big, funny kind of robot assassin. Instead, we have a scene with Yondu versus Death's Head that sees Death's Head kind of like let out into space. And then he crash lands on Earth. And we meet out the main characters of this hopefully this entire run. It's Wiccan and Hulkling, previously of the Young Avengers. Of course, they are a couple. Wiccan is at one point was the son of Scarlet Witch, and so he has magical powers. And then Hulkling he's like a Kree Skrull. He can shapeshift, and he's really strong. Anyway, they're dating, and then they're living together, and now they have to deal with Death's Head, this kind of like funny, wisecracking space assassin robot. Of course, Wiccan has some weird, like, he's been trying to access different realities to try and find the best, figure out which is the best way to live his life. So he's been watching other versions of himself in different realities. And this may be why Death's Head has come into their new apartment. I really enjoyed this. The writing was really, really good. And Kazama's art, while kind of scratchy when it started, especially when we first see Wiccan and Hulkling, it did grow on me by the end. Great colors by Philippe Sobriero, but excellent writing by Tini Howard. And that is why I'll be continuing with this series. A nice little surprise. And if you have some Death's Head recommendations to me, why don't you recommend them to me? And maybe one day, many, many years from now, I'll think about reading them. Over to Image now, and we have a new number one from just a creative team so good that there's no way I could miss this one. Chip Zdarsky is writing this one with art by Chris Anker and Matt Wilson on colors. Zdarsky, I'm sure if you've listened to one episode of this show, you will know Zdarsky as the artist behind Sex Criminals, the writer behind recent runs on Spider-Man, Daredevil, and a bunch of excellent creator-owned stuff as well. This is him doing a two-part story with Chris Anker, who we most recently loved as the main artist on Runaways. He's also extremely good at drawing penises, and so if Siobhan was here, this would be one of the best segments of Dong Watch ever, because Chip lets Chris Anker just go wild towards the end of this book, and there's a fun magic-fueled orgy, or almost orgy. No spoilers. And of course, Matt Wilson, one of the best colorists over at Marvel, and a frequent collaborator with Chris Anker. So it's an unbelievable team. The book is called The White Trees, A Black Sand Tale, and it's in two parts. We got this first issue, so the first part. It is a fantasy kind of setting. There's several, a couple of parents, I guess, are called to have a meeting with, is he like their king or something like that? Yeah, he's their majesty, and their majesty informs them that their children have been kidnapped. And so these are three adults, these three parents. So we have one man who used to be a very, very vicious warrior who has since turned to the land and given up violence. He is reunited with two other men who are dating. And one of their daughters has been, so it's, yeah, a son and a daughter have been kidnapped, and it's up to these people to reunite, put their differences aside, and try and rescue their children. And it's a pretty simple story, but it's the flair that you get from this team up of excellent comic book creators that makes this such a great read. This is one of the least funny Chip Zdarsky comics I've ever read, and that's not a bad thing by any means. But it's him definitely. You know, there's a few lighthearted moments. There's some very believable dialogue between the couple, and we also meet the ex-wife of one of the members of the couple at some point in this story. And there's some great little back and forth between there. But this is quite a somber book that I wasn't really expecting from Zdarsky. He's obviously been doing a lot more serious stuff, even in his superhero books as well lately. But he has a lot of range, and I think this is a great example of what an excellent writer he is. You need no further proof that Chris Anker is one of the best cartoonists working right now. I love him from a fashion point of view, so seeing him do a bunch of like great, you know, fantasy creatures, and of course their costumes and outfits is thrilling. And then later when we meet a bunch of mostly naked magic tricksters, of course they look wonderful as well, dicks and all. Look, this book is it's about parenting, I guess, in a way. It's about remembering who you were in the past and trying to turn a new leaf, but also not being able to escape your past. Which is, certainly not new themes to a comic book like this, but this was just an absolute joy to read, and I can't wait for that second part. I kind of wish it was longer, but I also think it's cool that it is just, it's cool to get a two-part comic book series these days. So definitely pick up, if you can still get it, The White Trees, A Black Sand Tale. I hope this will be a very, very like beautiful hardcover collection when they do collect it, both one and two later on in this year, I guess. Over to Dark Horse Comics, we get a new book by Jeff Lemire and Mike Diodato Jr. With Frank Martin and Steve Wands. This book is called Berserker Unbound. And in short, it is like, what if Conan the Barbarian accidentally accessed some, like, you know, after seeing his wife and child murdered at the hands of his enemies while trying to escape, accidentally accessed this weird magic, and then he got transported to like present day New York. And I just summed up the first issue. I'm reading a lot of Lemire books at the moment. This was by no means bad, but also I'm reading a lot of Lemire books right now. You don't have to read all of them, Levins. You can not read a Lemire book. Have you tried that maybe once in a while? Over to another Dark Horse series that Jim from King's Comics recommended me. This book is called No One Left to Fight. And it's by Aubrey Citizen, whose name rings a bell, but I can't think of anything by them that I've read in the past. Art by Ficho Osio and Taylor Esposito on colors. No One Left to Fight. Jim recommended it to me because he knows how much Shonen Jump manga I've been reading lately. And this is like a very fun take on, I guess, like a Dragon Ball kind of series. We have the once glorious warrior who saved the world time and time again, returning to his hometown where he's viewed as a hero. But in doing that, he meets up with his old friends. Two of them have gotten married, and the husband of the couple, he resents this hero. He always thought he was the more powerful fighter, and is constantly challenging this hero, and just hates him because everyone loves him so much. It's this fun reunion of typical, Shonen Jump-esque kind of like warrior characters who all have crazy fight moves and have grown up fighting. And they all have, they've got so much angst about each other. I read issue one and two of this. It's the only thing I don't like about it is the color palette. It's very, very neon, which I guess kind of suits the genre, but I'm so used to reading stories like this in black and white. So to see it colored this colorfully is a bit daunting. But I enjoyed this a lot, actually. I'm going to keep continuing with this series called No One Left to Fight. On the front, it boldly exclaims, it's the comic that you always wanted. And maybe it is No One Left to Fight. Maybe it is. That's it for First Things First. If you want to talk about any of the new series you've read in the last month, the best place to do that is in the Serious Issues Facebook group, which you can access by going to facebook.com/groups/Serious Issues Podcast. We're going to talk about some image books now, namely the final issue of a beloved Serious Issue series called Paper Girls, by Brian K. Vaughan, Cliff Chang, the aforementioned Matt Wilson, and Jared K. Fletcher. This long-running series hit its 30th issue last month, and that is its final issue. So Paper Girls lasted 30 issues long, And the 30th and final issue, obviously I'm not going to spoil anything, was a very satisfying conclusion, but it does something that we like. I guess a few comics, certainly most of Brian K. Vaughan's series, do this, where I guess all the action comes to the head in the penultimate issue. And so this issue is what happened next. And you see the characters getting on with their lives. And I had a lot of questions after reading this, but I think most of them should be answered if I go back and reread the entire series from the start, which I definitely intend to do one of these days, because it was a great series. Great writing by Brian K. Vaughan. Of course, it's about four paper girls in the 80s who get transported through time. Has excellent art by Cliff Chang, great colors by Matt Wilson. It's such an instantly recognizable book. Just if I'm looking at one panel, you can tell straight away that it's, I don't know, a Paper Girls book, Paper Girls issue. And I thought this is some of the best character work Brian K. Vaughan has done, where it's very, very difficult for me to say which of the four Paper Girls was my favorite, because he wrote them all with so much love and care. I was very satisfied with this ending. And maybe I'll talk about it more in the future when I finally reread it from the start. Highly recommended. Now, if you've been waiting for a while for this series to finish, if you're one of those people that's like, I don't want to get in at the beginning, I get in at the end when I know that it stuck the landing, this one definitely did. So go back and read it all. We got issue 14 of Snot Girl this month. Snot Girl is by Leslie Hung and Brian Lee O'Malley, and it is about Lottie, who is a fashion blogger and model. And she also suffers from allergies, and so they call her Snot Girl. The last few issues have been, we've kind of like been learning more and more about all these characters that she kind of hates having in her life. They really, really like test you push you to the limits of, do I like this main character or not? Not even just this character, like these characters in general. There's a lot of pretty unlikable characters in here, but that kind of makes the book that much more fun. We're seeing everything in Lottie's life kind of crashing down around her. Now we're seeing a few other people's lives crashing down too. There's a wedding, impending wedding featuring two characters from the book that we're getting closer and closer towards. And there's always been in the background of this series, like a dark side, a crime side, a mysterious figure. In this issue, we see that figure do something truly fucked up, real, real bad, a murder even. And that was not an element that I was expecting with this book. They've kind of hinted at it in the past, but in this issue, we straight up saw that. And I adore every panel of this book, and I love what they're doing with it now. Great series, Snot Girl. You should be reading it. You should also be reading Ice Cream Man, which hit its 13th issue this month. It's written by W. Maxwell Prince, with art by Martin Morazzo. We're going to be talking about Martin Morazzo again later with the final issue of the second volume of She Could Fly later on. Colors by Chris O'Halloran. And this is a horror book where every issue, there is like a vague kind of intertwined story from issue to issue, but they are kind of one shots. And this issue is a palindrome. You can read this issue forwards or backwards from the last to the first panel. And I just thought that meant that like you would be able to, like, you know, it doesn't matter where you start, the beginning or the end, the story makes sense as a cohesive narrative, no matter which way you read it. But actually it's straight up a palindrome in that it is like a mirror from halfway through the issue. Like when you get to the half of the issue, the comic repeats itself. And so where you see the character climbing down as the comic starts, he then climbs his way out. And even the dialogue is the same, but it does, yeah, it loops in on itself, and the characters do talk in palindromes. It's a really, really interesting concept that I'm not sure, you know, is it worth the money to have half of your comic be just a repeat of the first half? I would argue yes, because this is a very kind of cool idea that I thought was executed really well. It's a great series with so many great ideas. I don't think this is as strong as the Neapolitan issue of Ice Cream Man, where there was like three panels throughout each of the pages that told three different stories. But this was another really fun high concept issue of Ice Cream Man. Let's do some Lemire comics because I didn't shit on his last one, but I did say I'm not going to continue reading it. Whereas I'm loving, absolutely loving, Gideon Falls, which is another horror book written by Jeff Lemire with art by Andrea Sorrentino and Dave Stewart. And this is a book about, I mean, it's about so much more than its initial concept, which was like a man with a dark past being sent to become the pastor at a small town, and then discovering that there was some dark secrets in the town. It's kind of like about madness, and about like there's this black barn that's like the central kind of eerie figure in everyone's minds that haunts our two main characters, who may or may not be like related, as we kind of, yeah, all there were like two different narratives being told at the same time in the first few issues of this, and now I guess we learn that they are more related than we thought. This is like, it's definitely gone into the kind of like more bizarre horror where there are a lot of non sequiturs and things that necessarily make sense, but it's a fun ride. I hope that I recently reread Nameless by Grant Morrison and Chris Burnham, and I remember that being like a very high concept space horror comic that I thought really lost its way quite quickly. And this is definitely not losing its way. I just hope I don't want something too open ended of an ending. But I don't even know when this is ending, so these are fears that I should not even have. Jeff Lemire's other book that Image put out in the last month is Ascender, issue number 4. This is the sequel to Descender, which was a science fiction book by Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen on art and colors. But Ascender is a magic book about some of the remaining characters from Descender, one of whom has a daughter now, trying to use technology in this magic-only world and being chased by everyone in power because of it. It's really, really fun. Something massive happened in this one. Like they kind of like, as they were fighting the kind of big magical powers that are trying to come after them, it looks like they had like a little win, and then we were reunited with another character from the original Descender run who is drunk on her butt and certainly have seen better days. So it's going to be a fun fifth issue, just like this fourth issue. It's a really good series. I dare say I'm enjoying this more than Descender. I think because this is yet another series about parenting, and we all know that as a parent, I love those. Finally, from Image, I've got two more Image books. Second, almost finally from Image, I got Criminal, issue number 7 by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. Look, I've said that this is one of, if not my favorite monthly comic book, so many times when it returned, you know, 7 issues ago. And Ed Brubaker kind of put forward that this would be like a kind of almost anthology series where there would be like some ongoing stories, but there would be lots of one-shots. It would jump from, because all the volumes of Criminal that has come before this series has been like totally different stories told that like are kind of related. There are like, you have like repeat characters and things like that, but then you have others that are completely separated from it. It's the central theme is just crime. Yeah, apparently this current arc, which is called Cruel Summer, in which we learn the fate, or rather the death of one of the main characters of Criminal, what finally killed him, is going to be like quite a few issues long. This one focuses on Ricky Lawless, the son of Teague Lawless, who I guess Teague is, if there ever was a main character of Criminal, Teague would be it. And we met Ricky in one of the Criminal specials that came out a few years ago, where we saw just how bad of a father Ricky is, and just how bad of a father Teague is, and Ricky is very fucked up by the actions of his father. Teague is currently being courted by a woman who basically scams her way through relationships and steals the wallets and bank accounts of every man that she's ever been with, except she and Teague are hitting it off, and Ricky hates her for what she's doing to his dad, not stealing his money, but turning him into a father that's trying to appear like he's a good father, a good man. His son hates it. There's a really, really tragic moment in here where Ricky's friends just want to play Dungeons and Dragons, and at one point in his life, that was all Ricky wanted to do too. But he's growing up, and his interests are like, you know, horrible things like running, like causing mischief and running away from cops and getting himself in worse and worse situations as the issue progresses. This is not going to be a very happy arc, this Cruel Summer. It's going to be cruel indeed, and I'm here for it. I fucking love this series. Great back matter, as always. Excellent letters section in which Ed Brubaker is asked a question about adaptations in general, which I thought was really interesting. And then, so much great back matter in general. This is just such an excellent book to get in single issue format. And I'm just in awe that a book with such good art, such a good writing and such good back matter is only $3.99. It's one of the thickest books I get. I mean, look, it's no absolute carnage, but it's not far behind it in terms of page count. Better quality paper too. So from Image, this is the last Image book I'm talking about. I'm reading Sea of Stars, which is the Jason Aaron and Dennis Hallam, Stephen Green and Rico Renzi. It's like a space action book in which a father and a son are separated. And this is kind of like chronicling the father trying to get through space and find his son. And we learn about his tragic backstory. We meet a whole bunch of like bad aliens and robots and fun space stuff. And I guess the son is having his own adventure too. It's not my favorite Jason Aaron story. Look, one could argue that much like I'm reading too many Jeff Lemire books, I may be reading too many Jason Aaron books too. But I'm enjoying this so far. It's a fun, pretty easy read. So that's it for Image. I'm going to have a sip of water and then we can talk about DC Comics. Delicious. Just like issue 2 of Superman's Pal, Jimmy Olsen, by Matt Fraction, Steve Lieber, and Nathan Fairbairn. This is, even though it's only 2 issues in, easily my favorite book DC is putting out right now, just because it is so tonally different. If I wanted to compare it to anything, in terms of like high concept joke humor, and that kind of plays with the format of comics and is very meta in its delivery. It's very much a writer's comic, a comedy writer's comic in that. I would compare it to like almost like a more adult Unbeatable Squirrel Girl in terms of like knowing jokes. It's a lot less goofy. Actually, no, it's just as goofy. What am I talking about? But yes, this is like a Jimmy Olsen book. Of course, Jimmy Olsen being the dumbass photographer at the Daily Planet. And we learn a lot about his family history in this issue. I don't even know he had a brother, let alone a scumbag asshole brother who treats Jimmy like shit. But this jumps around in terms of time. At the moment, Jimmy is in Gotham, but there are multiple like kind of like it's told in like little vignettes. You get little strips almost that are introduced, as different stories, but they're all linked of like, yeah, we have like Jimmy and Superman hanging out together. We have Jimmy and his brother having an argument together. We have Jimmy in Gotham, who eventually, I guess, gets on the phone to Lois Lane. I'm enjoying this so much. I've always loved Matt Fraction as a writer, particularly when he's writing comedy. And even though I'm desperate to get to the end of Sex Criminals one day, this is a fun distraction in the meantime. Highly recommend Superman's Pal, Jimmy Olsen. Definitely my favorite DC book at the moment. And part of the it's a 12 issue maxi series, which is exactly what the Lois Lane series by another one of my favorite writers, Greg Rucka. This is Greg Rucka, Mike Perkins teaming up with Paul Mounts on colors. And this is a story about, Lois Lane as a reporter, getting herself in deeper and deeper water and getting herself in trouble and lying to different people to get story and teaming up with Renee Montoya. On paper, this is everything I want in a comic. I love the character of Lois Lane. I love Renee Montoya. I love Greg Rucka. But there's just something about this series that is not connecting with me at all. And maybe it's just a case of me waiting until either 6 issues are collected or the entire thing is finished and I'll go back and read it then. But I think I'm going to drop off it now. Unfortunately, not for me at this point in my life. Event Leviathan, though, 6 issue mystery thriller written by Brian Michael Bendis and Alex Maleev on art, also features Lois Lane. A lot of Lois at DC at the moment. That is a very good thing. So Event Leviathan is all the secret organizations in the DC universe have been brought down by Leviathan, and Batman, Green Arrow, Plastic Man, The Question, and Lois Lane all think, and Robin, Damian, all think that the Red Hood is behind it, Jason Todd. And so this is them fighting and failing Jason Todd against Jason Todd. The only one who kind of gets through to him and gets any information out of him is Lois Lane. He's like, do you know where Amanda Waller is right now? And Amanda Waller, maybe this whole thing is on her is her fault. I think Amanda Waller is like one of the best characters in DC, just because she is just someone that she's like Lex Luthor times 10 in terms of like being kind of evil but getting away with it. This kind of, yeah, I guess sees her chickens come to roost, if I'm using the term right, and only to be saved by Superman at the end of this issue. So it's cool seeing Brian Bendis, you know, after doing some Superman issues, really utilizing so many of the characters in DC. This is the kind of event book that I love, where it's just so many different characters that you never really see hanging out and getting into some hijinks. I'm enjoying this a lot more than anything else Bendis has done for DC so far. So yeah, that's a recommend from me. No one tells Siobhan. Grant Morrison, Liam Sharp have been doing, it's the 10th issue of the Green Lantern, and it's Grant Morrison just getting totally wacky and doing wild space bullshit. In this one, he introduces 10 different multiverse versions of Green Lantern. One of whom is like a weed smoking hippie. One of whom is like Batman. Of course they're teaming up with Hal Jordan. And it's like kind of fun. I just kind of don't care. I feel like an ongoing thread hasn't really emerged yet. And every time I read an issue of this, it just feels like I'm reading a new first issue. And it's hard to get excited for it every time I see it in my stack. So I might be dropping off this one too. Look, I made it through 10 issues. And I think that's what qualifies as a red hot go or a green hot go. Finally from DC is Deceased. You can tell Siobhan this because I was the one who didn't like the first issue of Deceased by Tom Taylor and Trevor Hairsine. Then she told me with the second issue to get back on it. There's like a weird techno virus that's turning everyone in the DC universe into zombies. There's a little coalition of heroes who have not yet looked at a telephone. And so they're safe. They haven't been turned into flesh-eating evil zombies. And they're the ones trying to save whoever's left and maybe reverse this awful techno virus. But something catastrophic happens at the end of this issue, and maybe none of them even survive it. So I don't know where Tom Taylor is going with this story, but I am damn glad that I'm here for it because it is a ton of fun. And again, just like it's fun to see Bendis use so many different DC characters in Event Leviathan, it's really fun to see Tom Taylor use so many different characters in Deceased.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey everybody, it's actually been 3 weeks since I hit stop on that last segment, so I think I just talked about DC Comics. Yeah, it's been 3 weeks. In that time, I have bought a house, which is cool and also extremely stressful, I've curated and run a food and music festival in Sydney, which was also stressful and a lot of work, and the last thing I felt like doing was sitting down and talking about comics by myself. It's crazy to think that that wouldn't be appealing to me in any way when I'm fatigued at all. But now you know. So I'm slept well. I'm feeling pretty good at the moment. Obviously, you know, it feels good to be a homeowner. Not many people from my generation can say that, and it feels surreal to be able to say that. but here we are. Let's talk about comics. Let's start talking about houses. Houses are so boring. It's stressful. You've got to do so much. But anyway, Marvel Comics. Let's talk about Marvel Comics that are over a month old now. House of X number 2. Jonathan Hickman continuing his excellent run on the X-Men properties. It's so good just that there's just 2 X-Men books at the moment, and I wish that was just the norm from here on in. Whatever. I know they've got to try and make as much money as possible. And I know what it's like to want to buy a house, and everyone at Marvel wants to buy a house. And we should be supportive of them and their decisions to release 400 comic books a week in order to allow all their staff to do that. House of X number 2 with art by Pepe Larraz. This is the one, I'm sure you've all read like 6 issues of these series by now, but this is the one where everyone was like, oh my God, this series is going to do some great things. This is the issue all about Moira, who is a someone that's important to Professor X and always has been in X-Men history. But in this... God, it's been a while since I read it now, but in this issue, we learn the many lives of Moira X. And so basically, they've retconned it so that Moira is a mutant who has lived, at this point, 10 different lives. And every time she dies, she resets and lives another life. It turns out that she is now going to be integral to the plot. She's the reason that the mutants are currently doing as well as they are in House of X. Also, she's directly linked to the mutants we see in the future in Powers of X. This is just a phenomenal issue that I think if you are like, oh, do I want to go in and read what Hickman is doing with the X-Men properties? I think this is definitely the issue that, like, you know, you should dip your toe in. This is the water that you dip your toe into, however that phrase works. House of X 2, like, a really, really exciting issue with so many cool ideas and just indicative of, like, why I love Hickman so much. Of course, there's all kinds of insane back matter and graphs, and we have, like, an actual visual timeline. Multiple timelines of all of the many lives that Moira has lived. And what happened during those lives. Those kind of things are so appreciated. And I hope they collect them all for the trade releases. But yeah, so that's House of X number 2. I've also read Powers of X 2 and 3. So these are both 6 issue limited series. Powers of X has art by R.B. Silva, who I really enjoy here, and Pepe Larraz. I think they were both... Shut up, Siri. I think they were both artists on one of those weekly Avengers series that I quite liked. The ones from like a year ago. I don't remember what they were called. Oh, shit. Also, I should update everyone. Hey, I remembered that I was trying to think of Norman Osborn. So thanks to everyone who was pulling out their hair. In my head, you've been pulling out your hair for 3 weeks, even though it's only been probably 20 minutes since I couldn't remember who Norman Osborn's last name was. Whatever. The Powers of X stuff I wasn't enjoying as much as House of X because it is all the kind of future timeline nonsense, which, you know, normally is a lot of fun, but I'm so excited about all what's going on in House of X. I want to know what's happening now, not what is going to be retconned in the future. But I love that they managed to tie in that story with Moira, who shows up in issue 3 of Powers of X. And very excited to see how these two miniseries tie into each other in the future. Really cool stuff. Silver Surfer Black, issue number 3. Donny Cates, Trad Moore, Dave Stewart. It's a beautiful looking book. It's a real fun issue to read. This great epic story that's, you know, really, really embraces the insane kind of cosmic past of Silver Surfer. It's probably the best Silver Surfer has looked since Mobius drew his had his take on the character many, many years ago. You know how much we love Trad Moore over at Serious Issues. And it looks like, you know, I can't believe it lasted this long before we got him face to face with an old friend, if you want to call him a friend. But it looks like, of course, this series is going to pit Silver Surfer back in the sights of Galactus, who was once the Lifebringer, but now I think he's back to his old planet-sucking ways. It's fun. It's a very fun ride. It's good to read a Donny Cates book again that I really love. I feel like I kind of got lost trying to follow what he was doing with Guardians of the Galaxy and Venom. But this is fun, and I think I prefer him when he's on a miniseries, I guess, overall. The opposite of a miniseries is the long, was it 5, 6, 7, 8 years stretch that Jason Aaron has been doing on Thor. It is coming. I think it's coming to an end by the time I'm recording right now, but I've not read the final issue. This is issue number 15, which is written by Jason Aaron with art by Mike Telmundo. Okay. Hey, Siri, shut up. Very weird. I have a HomePod and I have a watch, and both of them have decided to try and be guests on this podcast so far. It's really fun. You should get Apple products, guys. They talk to you all the time, even when you're recording podcasts. So it's almost like having a co-host. But issue 15 of Thor showed what happens to Malekith post the big War of the Realms event. And I thought that was a really, really sweet, like, you know, It pulls a switcheroo. Malekith thinks that something is horrible is happening to the worst, the only good part of him. But there's a nice kind of like trick that only the audience sees at the end of the issue. It basically shows how he's going to suffer after his many, many atrocities during this war. We also get a bit of nice kind of setup for Loki's series, but it's a nice kind of farewell to Loki in this issue as well. Really good. I'm really looking forward to reading that final issue. I've been collecting all of Jason Aaron's Thor run, and I think with King Thor, which I believe comes out this week, that'll finally be the last thing I need to collect from this series. I've stopped collecting Valkyrie. I'm going to read it. I'm not collecting it anymore. One of the things that you'll find when you move house is that physical media is just like kilos upon kilos upon metric tons of guilt. You're like, oh, I can't explain to you, my loved ones, why I need so much of this thing, but it's something that I have and I don't want to ever get rid of it. So this is now your burden too. And you knew what you're getting into, but I'm not going to apologize for who I was. I'm just going to try and be a better person going forward. But yes, try and decrease the amount of physical media you take on, especially when you have others in your life. So much wisdom in this episode. I miss Siobhan so much. issue 22 of Avengers, another one by Jason Aaron, with art by Stefano Caselli. This is a cool one about Ghost Rider. I love how Ghost Rider is so integral to like the kind of. I just love the way that actually all of the characters on this Avengers team are given like a lot to do. But I like how focused in on Ghost Rider it is. Of course, this is the Ghost Rider that drives a car, Robbie. And he doesn't want to be a Ghost Rider anymore. He wants to be separated from the Hell Force beneath him. And so they call on Damon Hellstrom to come and exercise Ghost Rider of his demon. But that ain't going to happen without a fight or a race. So he has to race the spirit of vengeance in hell. Motorbike versus Hot Rod. So that'll be in the next issue, which is very exciting. Plus, we see something very, very ancient that suggests that an Iron Man-esque figure existed 1 million years ago, around the same time as the awesome, fun Avengers 1 million BC. Whatever. Was it called 1 million BC? I assume so. But that's fun. Good fun stuff. Avengers comics should be fun. Hey, speaking of Valkyrie, Jane Foster Valkyrie, that is. Jason Aaron is writing this series with Al Ewing, and Kafu is the artist on this one. And this very fun issue pits Valkyrie versus Bullseye, which is a very unlikely matchup. What makes Valkyrie special is Jane Foster can now see when people are going to die. And so that is how she views the world. And she tries to save people from imminent death, or, you know, sees long-term death. She can also guide fallen heroes through to Valhalla. And so the ongoing story here is that she's going into a journey into mystery with a very well-known Thor character, I guess you could call him, an Asgardian, a very, very famous Asgardian, who I won't spoil who it is, because they may be dead. But I'm really, really enjoying this one. Again, another fun one, a lot more like Jason Aaron's Avengers style of fun than his kind of very mythical Thor stuff. The Immortal Hulk, issue number 22 by Al Ewing and Joe Bennett, just continues to be one of, if not the best book Marvel is putting out right now. There's just so many characters in this story now. You have lots of people from Hulk's past all kind of coming together, and often there are scenes featuring everyone except the Hulk in it, which is fun. It still is like this great mix of horror and action comic. I'm really loving it. I'm sure I don't really need to sell anyone else on this book. It's a must read, and one of the few superhero must reads at the moment, I reckon. I'm also really enjoying Chip Zdarsky's Daredevil. He just wrapped up No Devils Only Good. Chip Zdarsky is writing this one. Unfortunately, the art is changing pretty frequently. So we have Lalit Kumar Sharma on issue 9. And then we have Jorge Fornes on issue 10. And they're both great artists, but they have pretty different styles of art. So it would be nice if they kind of, you know, let the artists, I mean, especially Chip being an artist himself, if he was able to like put his foot down and be like, this needs to come out less regularly, so the artists can, the one artist can take his time and give the pages the time that they deserve to get the level of quality art that they deserve. But, Marvel, like I said earlier, they need to buy some houses, and this is the only way how. I kind of remember what's happening in Daredevil. It's just solid. I really loved Jorge Fornes's art. It reminded me a lot of David Ayer's work on Hawkeye. Congratulations to Chip Zdarsky for making it 10 issues into a Daredevil series before having Elektra show up. They haven't fucked yet, so we can only assume that'll happen within the first panel of issue 11. Runaways, issue number 23. Again, another Marvel one where it's like, what else do I need to say at this point? I love this book I have for the last 22 issues, so why wouldn't I also love issue 23? And this is written by Rainbow Rowell with continuing art by Andre Genolet, colors by Matthew Wilson. It's a great team. Runaways is a great team too. You may have seen teased that Marvel have a new superhero team that they've been teasing, and it's been revealed that the Runaways are going to try their hand at being superheroes finally. And so this current arc is what leads us to that point. And it's a lot of fun because obviously some of them are far more keen on the idea, while others are very, very opposed to it. And this is a great comic about arguing. So you know it's going to be the good shit. That's it for Marvel until I like open up the bag of comics next to my bed, which features at the moment 2 weeks worth. And I believe there's another week waiting for me at King's. Whatever. Look, you'll get it soon. At this point, I should give a big shout out to Robert Sheridan, at Crash Sheridan on Twitter. He's from Philly, and he's been listening to the show since the beginning. And he actually wrote to me and said, "Yo, just wondering if my favorite comic book podcast will have a new episode anytime soon. I appreciate all the effort that goes into every show, but I'm greedy and I want as many episodes as possible." If that was 5 days ago, and if it wasn't for him, I would have waited another week. I literally have had such a small amount of time that, and this, and being a show that I now do on my own while I give Siobhan a break to work on figuring out how to fucking function with two children. Been there, done that. It sucked. It takes about 3 years, which is exactly the amount of time it's been since I had two children, to figure it out. So we hopefully we'll get Siobhan before that point. But it is really, really hard to kind of work out that this is something that I need to do because I feel like I talk to so few people about it. I forget who actually listens to it. I forget who even wants it. So if you do, you know, want to have this podcast be more regular, best thing to do is do what Robert did. Hit me up on Twitter at LevDog, LevDawg, or over at Facebook. We have a Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/Serious Issues Podcast. Talk about the show with me and I'll remember that it's a thing that exists. And I will remember to record it more often. It doesn't even need to be about weekly comics. I'm constantly reading still. Like, that's the thing. I feel like at the end of last year, I was just over the concept of comics. Since we restructured the show to a monthly record and I'm not forcing myself to read comics I'm not interested in, I love them again. I have less on my plate that I read for the show and more things that I'm just reading that I would love to talk about anyway. So, look, if you want more episodes, talk to me. I'm open to it in the future. Anyway, other publishers right now, 5 Years by Terry Moore. This is the coming together of all of Terry Moore's incredible comic book properties. So you have Strangers in Paradise, you have Echo, you have Rachel Rising, and you have Motor Girl, all coming together with the concept that the Earth is going to end in 5 years unless all of these characters band together and stop the government from destroying the world. Much like some of the Runaways are reluctant to become superheroes, some of the characters in these very different series are reluctant to abandon their families to help save the world. And I really love the different points of view on this series. Terry Moore's a fantastic artist, but he's also, like, first and foremost for me, like, the reason I love his stuff so much is that he's such a great character writer. Often I feel like what made me fall in love with Strangers in Paradise, for example, is that he writes very small scale stories at the start of that run. It gets much bigger towards the end. But, you know, so you fall in love with the characters and you can watch them do gardening, read about them, you know, garden and clean the house. And that's interesting. So to have them now dealing with, like, the end of the world, it's riveting stuff. It's brilliantly written. It looks great. He's got excellent black and white pencils and inks are just some of the best in the business. And, I'm very grateful that a series like this exists, even though it's pretty morbid. She Could Fly, The Lost Pilot, the sequel to She Could Fly by Christopher Cantwell, Martin Marazzo, and Miroslav Merva, that comes out through Berger Books on Dark Horse. It had its fifth and final issue until we get a third series, which I think they tease at the end of this. Let's see. The final page says, "The End?" So that's good. I reckon we will get a third thing. But of course, this is someone, this deals with a teenage girl who has a disorder that allows her, doesn't allow her, she is forced to hear horrible voices in her head at all times, telling her that the worst thing is going to happen, or that the worst thing has happened, and it's all her fault, and she thinks horrible, violent thoughts about everyone in her life. But this sequel to the excellent initial four issues kind of added a love interest for her, which I thought was handled really well. Plus, it brought back all of the storylines from the first four issues and added a bunch of new ones and updated us with, like, all these crazy different storylines featuring the characters in this world. It's as awful and violent and as lovely and sweet as the first series, if you can imagine all those four things together. And now that it's finished, if you were someone that only read the trade of the first series, definitely pick up the trade for this. It was as good as the original, and I think will read really well as a trade, because there are so many different threads of story. I assume you all yelled out, bless you, and I appreciate that. There are so many different threads of story in this sequel that I think it will be fun to read it all in one hit, so you get a little less lost. But massive fan of Christopher Cantwell. I think he has a new series out now through Dark Horse called Everything, which I'm looking forward to picking up from Kings when I go there later this week. Speaking of Dark Horse, probably their most popular series, Black Hammer, at the moment, is teaming up with Justice League. So it's a Dark Horse and DC comic come together. It's called Hammer of Justice with Jeff Lemire and Michael Walsh. And it's just okay. It's not bad by any means. I definitely enjoyed this second issue a lot more than the first issue because it expanded the universe, the DC universe. And so you see a lot more of the Black Hammer characters. Like, there's a brilliant meetup between Jon Stewart, the Green Lantern, and Colonel Weird that I thought was the highlight of the issue. There's a fun tease in the final issue too. It's definitely something I'm enjoying reading, but I think it's... it's far from the greatness that is regular Black Hammer. Heathen is a book that is published by Vault, and it's written and drawn by Natasha Alterici, with letters by Rachel Deering. It looks absolutely beautiful. We've been raving about it since it started many years ago. It is a book kind of... It could almost be like a... This could just be a Journey into Mystery series over at Marvel, if Marvel had the fucking balls to let this happen. Because this is... It's a book about... like an Asgardian woman who is ostracized because she has feelings for other women and acts on them. And so she is banished. This is kind of about her journey back into Asgard, I guess, teaming up with different other Norse gods and other Norse mythological figures. It's a really beautiful written and drawn book. And it's my favorite book that Vault published, for sure. And I'm glad that it's coming back in monthly format. Finally, from other publishers, and I've got some more stuff to talk about. Don't you worry. Didn't make you wait 3 weeks for nothing. Usagi Yojimbo is now published by IDW. And it's color, the final issue of the first arc, Bunraku, finished. And it was a one that dealt with supernatural themes, which is not what this samurai bunny rabbit usually does. Of course, this is written and drawn by Stan Sakai. And this saw Usagi, the traveling bunny rabbit samurai, hang out with an old friend and go watch some Japanese marionette theater. But turns out the puppets are possessed by evil spirits. And so this fun little intro to the Usagi Yojimbo world for IDW readers was fun. It looks great. The colors are excellent. I was a bit dubious of, you know, are these colors going to look as good as the regular black and whites? And they're not too distracting. I think they're quite well done, though, by Tom Luth. I think he did a great job. I don't know if a kind of fun, goofy, spooky marionette puppet short story is the best intro to this series. I'm hoping they dial it back a bit, but as someone that's read many, many Usagi Yojimbo stories before this one, it was fun, very different to the last one I read, which was all about the introduction of Christianity to feudal Japan, which, as you can imagine, extremely different to haunted puppets. Or is it? That's it for other publishers, but I have some even more other publishers, some locally produced, local Australian comics, including the latest one of our favorite and friend of the show's anthology called Meet Me in the Pit. This is issue 3 of Meet Me in the Pit, and I'm pulling it out of its plastic wrap now. It has an excellent pink and blue color, but then the insides are all black and white. It's edited and curated by Chris Neal, who was a guest on Serious Issues many, many months ago. He's asked if he can come back and do an episode with me about Shonen Jump in the future, which I'm all for. This basically is an anthology comic all about music the different writer and artists, their experiences with music. So you have a number of kind of very personal comics about short comics about, you know, an experience watching a band or hearing a song for the first time or trying to be in a band. Some of them are funny, some of them are sad, some of them are very arty, some of them are kind of like strip comics, some of them are, you know, just one page with an idea on it. And that is what an anthology should be all about, like just a whole bunch of crazy different stories from very, very different writers and artists with different ideas. I think this is actually my favorite of the three Meet Me in the Pit so far. And if you want to buy one, head over to Google Meet Me in the Pit Blueprint Comics. You should have a website on here by now, Chris. Come on, dog. What's going on? There were some excellent contributions to this issue. And I'm looking forward to the next one. I hope we get another one because they're good. I really appreciate this series. As someone that, like, yeah, I'm always a bit like, oh no, they're talking about music in a regular comic. To read an anthology of comics that are specially made to talk about music, it's a nice, better feeling. I also got sent two zines, although they're pretty high class, high quality zines, mini comics. A friend of mine who, would you believe, I used to draw comics with when I was in high school and just out of high school, Dominic Proust, who he chose the noble path of continuing to draw. And in fact, if you want to see his excellent artwork, excellent and highly amusing artwork, you can go to, let's find him. I think it's Dom_in_8. In Australia, we have this great thing called Drawing Dicks on the Herald Sun, which is, the Herald Sun is Melbourne's right-wing newspaper. In Sydney, we call it the Daily Telegraph. And some very funny guys, Larry Boxall, who used to host a awesome comic book podcast that got me into the idea of doing a comic book podcast, Non-Canonical. He spearheaded this. Basically, they even put on art gallery shows. But basically, people find a stupid article in the Herald Sun or another newspaper, and using whiteout pencils, inks, whatever have you, they draw big, fantastic penises all over these articles. And Dom was a many time contributor to the Drawing Dicks in the Herald Sun collections, which are near and dear to my heart. But there's significantly less penises in the comics that Dom sent me. One of them he sent me was Hash Brown comics. And when I was a kid, I would go to zine fairs and art shows, and I would just I would have $20 budget, and I would buy 10 $2 comics or seven $3 comics. Don't do the maths on that. They would be often anthologies of lots of different friends working together. So Hash Brown Comics number 3 features about 12 different contributors, and Dom is one of them. He wrote probably my favorite comic in here. Because I when you haven't seen anyone in a long while, but they are someone that you have, I just associate. We used to play a game where one of us would draw something on a piece of paper, then you would actually you would do a panel. So you would do let's say an eight grid panel layout. And so he would draw the first panel, and then I would draw the second panel. He would draw the third, fourth, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, passing back and forth. He was a significantly better artist than me, which is probably why he's still drawing and I'm not. But I'll try and find them because they're really, really great. But he did a great two-page comic in this issue of Hash Brown Comics, in which he calls a place of employment and tries to get a day off for a sick day, which just reminded me of him in the best way possible. Also, when he sent me the latest issue of Hash Brown Comics, he sent me an anthology of horror called Unfellow. And Unfellow has... has a couple of short stories and comics in it. Dom did the cover art, and then he also did one of the comics within it. But the majority of these comics in here are by an artist called Tatiana Davidson, and they are so good. They're so funny and really, really fun, a little bit creepy, but fun and kind of silly horror comics. It's called Unfellow. There's five stories of surreal horror to read in the middle of the night in an empty house. And it's got excellent art. It's got they're really great inks, and it's all black and white, but it's really, really well done. Great tones and use of shadows in all the art. Dom did one of the stories too, about mummification. Super duper fun. I love short horror stories. I just read a Junji Ito, the Japanese artist, an anthology of a bunch of his horror comics, which I loved. And Unfollow was a great little companion piece to that, a nice little bookend to my foray into Japanese horror. So speaking of Japanese comics, let's do a little bit of manga, because as you may have guessed from listening to the last few issues, it's kind of all I read now. I am two volumes into 20th Century Boys by Naoki Urasawa, and he's one of the most beloved mangakas. You would know him from multiple mentions of on serious issues in the past years, because Siobhan has read a ton of his things. But he's the writer of Monster, Pluto, Yarawa, and 20th Century Boys, I guess, is his best known work, which I am two volumes in. I just started the third volume last night. I've got these beautiful volumes. What are they called? They're called the editions have a really, really cool name that I wish I... The Perfect Edition. So this is the Perfect Edition of 20th Century Boys, and each edition has 20 chapters in it. I got them from Madman, which you can check out. They have sales all the time. Madman.com.au, a great way to buy manga trades and anime statues and the like. But yeah, 20th Century Boys is one of the greatest things I've ever read. And normally I would burn through Like, I read a lot of stupid Shonen Jump. Sorry, still stupid, but it is not challenging reading. Let me put it that way. It's very, very fun and often silly. It is stories targeted at teenage boys. And obviously, it's, you know, not only for teenage boys. Anyone can read them, but that's the target demographic. Sometimes I'll have moments where I'm like, why am I reading this? And then continue to read another 300 chapters of it. But I'm taking my time with this one. Normally, I burn through all the Shonen Jump stuff. This one I'm reading maybe like one of these editions over 2 weeks or so like that. And it's a book about, I guess, without spoiling too much, it is about a cult that's starting at the turn of the century, because it's kind of, yeah, it's towards the, it's set in the, it, this is, this came out in the 90s. It started, sorry, in the late 90s, early 2000s, I think. I can tell you that exactly when he started it. How about that? I bet you don't have Wikipedia at your house. 1999 to 2006. So basically, it's set in the late 1990s, but there's flashbacks to the late 1960s and rock and roll. Plays a big part in this series. In fact, the name 20th Century Boys is also the name of a T-Rex song, which is an excellent song. So in the late 90s, we have Kenji, who is the main character of this, who is looking after his missing sister's baby, while he also tries to run a convenience store that his family has looked after his entire life, and he's not doing a very good job of running it. All the while he's trying to survive, there is a cult starts in Tokyo, starts to kind of, as you read more and more of the book, the cult is spreading around the world, and they are responsible for some awful things happening around the world too. And Kenji learns throughout the first volume that he is a lot more directly linked, and especially things that he came up with when he was a kid, to this cult. And in fact, he may know the person who is running the cult, and the cult may have, the whole thing may have only been started in response to something Kenji did as a child. It's crazy fun. I've never read a story like this before. Like, obviously, because you have like the kind of 60s flashback to now kind of thing, it feels like Stand By Me a little bit. Besides that, I can't think of any like immediate thing to compare it to. Urasawa's art is brilliant. It tells the story so well, but the writing in this is the reason to pick it up. It's a brilliant thriller. And I can't think of any other excellent kind of manga thrillers that I've read so far. Normally they're all, you know, dumb adventure boy stories. I'm really shitting on Shonen Jump considering I read so much of it, but this is a cut above is what I'm trying to say. And I think there's four volumes of the perfect editions of 20th Century Boys out right now. As I said, each of them contains 20 chapters. And I think that it ran for about 10 years. No, sorry, I already said that, didn't I? It ran from 1999 to 2006, so 7 years. And then there's a little sequel, a follow-up called 21st Century Boys. So I'm trying to hold back. I'm going to try and read this at a nice leisurely pace and really seep in the story really well, because I know at some point I'm going to go past the point that they've collected these perfect editions of, and I really want to read all the perfect editions. They're gorgeous. They're so well put together, and I'm going to have to hold myself back from trying to either borrow someone else's copies of the earlier editions or read it digitally somehow. This is the way I want to read it. It's really, really good, and I highly recommend. If anyone's looking for a fun and very different new story, especially if they're like cool thrillers, pick up 20th Century Boys. The second volume just ramped things up significantly, and it was so cool. So I said Shonen Jump a minute ago, and while I was semi-insulting in the way I was describing it, it is, like I said in previous episodes, the Shonen Jump app changed my life this year because it gave me access, first and foremost, to One Piece, which I read all 900 and something chapters of in 4 months. And then since then, I have caught up on... I'll go through all my favorites. So there's One Piece. I read that one first. So every week... The thing about Shonen Jump is it's a weekly comic book... It's a weekly manga series. It's a magazine that you get... I think it comes out every Sunday. And within it are updated chapters for multiple different stories that are serialized in Shonen Jump. So I read One Piece first, then I read The Promised Neverland, which is an awesome book about kids in an orphanage in an awful future version of our world involving demons. I don't want to spoil, because like the joy of reading these series is like, for the most part, I don't know what happens in any of them. So even the first chapter is full of fun twists and turns. Promised Neverland is really, really great. Dr. Stone is a very, very fun and stupid book about science, in which opens with everyone on Earth being turned into stone statues, and then awakening thousands of years later are our two heroes. It's about them kind of rebuilding society, and it favors science over might and brawn, which is, you know, a nice kind of flip on what we normally get in a Shonen Jump adventure story. I'm a massive fan of Demon Slayer, or Kimetsu no Yaiba, which is also kind of, I think, maybe the best anime series coming out at the moment, at least the best animated too. I love My Hero Academia, and even more so, I love the spin-off series My Hero Academia. What's it called? Shut up, Siri. I've told you before. You're not allowed on this show. I'm waiting for Siobhan. It's called Vigilantes, and I really like that too. That's a lot of fun. It's like so My Hero Academia is all about, it's almost like a manga take on an X-Men series about a bunch of like teenage kids going to a school to learn how to be heroes. But then the Vigilantes, as you could guess, is for three heroes that they're not registered. They're not going to school. They're just trying to be heroic outside and keep to themselves and not get arrested for being heroes. But it's like a prequel series to the regular My Hero Academia. So you have a lot of characters before you see them in the main series show up in this. It's lots of fun. A series that I was very reluctant to try out after I read the first issue, Chainsaw Man, which is a book all about like demons. A lot of these are about demons. A kid who inherits the debts of his father has to kill demons for money, and then he ends up being killed by the people that he is trying to get money back to. But a demon bonds with him, and the demon is a chainsaw demon, so he becomes a chainsaw man with a chainsaw in his face. It is so stupid. I mean, a majority of these books for Japanese teenage boys are incredibly horny, which is very appealing. And this one is absolutely horny as fuck. But there's something really sweet and endearing about it, and the art is great. And then all of a sudden you get five issues in, the story starts to tell. You know, you can burn through five chapters of this manga in 10 minutes. You know, it's not a hard read at all, which is why it's so appealing to read when you are tired or stressed or whatever. It's just a fun way to end your day. But the big story now is like, it's really fun and kind of gruesome and sad. It's great. It's indicative of why I like all of these shonen stories. A guilty pleasure is one called Beast Children, which is all about... I've been reading Haikyuu as well, which is a volleyball manga. Because I remember when we were talking about Fence, which was the fencing comic book that we loved on Serious Issues a couple months ago. Just wrapped up, and they're going to make the move to trade. But Siobhan often said this is just like a Western sports manga. And I was like, oh, I have to put that on my to-do list, read a sports manga. So Haikyuu is 300 and something chapters in. But I also started reading Beast Children, which at the moment is 15 issues in. And yeah, it's all about a young boy who wants to play rugby union, but as it's a relatively obscure sport in Japan, only very few schools allow you to play it. And so he goes to one of the few schools that has rugby in their curriculum. And he's like a little short kid, as is the norm for your, protagonist in a sports manga. But against all odds, this little kid, he tackles the biggest, most camp shirtless men, who are apparently 14 years old. I'm actually having a lot of fun with it. The art isn't quite as good as all the other manga series that I mentioned so far. It's fun. It's very endearing. And the story is quite sweet too. I'm a big fan of One Punch Man. I'm sure you know all about that. And then I've been dipping in and out of some other newer mangas that Shonen Jump are putting out. Double Taisei is like just batshit insane book about a guy with split personality disorder. So his two personalities, one wakes up at night, the other exists during the day. But every day the two of them play a... so like before going to bed, he'll make a move in this like Japanese game called Taisei. And like, yeah, it's like a kind of like a tile, Japanese tile game. And so they've been playing the same game together for like multiple years, and they each make one move before they go to bed and pass on their body to the other person. It's insane. And it's one of those ones where, and often a lot of these are like that, where you're like, do I like this, or is this just too weird that I can't stop reading it? Tokyo Shinobi Squad, I'm going to drop. That one was kind of like just way too generic feeling. I mean, even the name is extremely generic. Samurai 8, The Tale of Hachimaru, is by the same writer of Naruto, Masashi Kishimoto, but has one of his... someone who is like, you know, I guess like one of his assistants is now the artist on this one, Akira Okubo. And I love the art, but this is a... it hasn't grabbed me yet. It's a story about a kid learning to become a samurai. There's lots of crazy future tech in this. I think it's one of those ones where I'm reading it and I'm like, why? How come I'm just not reading Naruto instead of this? So that is on the cards. I might make the switch to reading some old stuff again. A bunch of new ones started just in the last couple of weeks. One was called Mitama Security Spirit Busters, which was just too stupid. And then similarly was Mission Yozakura Family, in which there is a family of spies. Like after losing their parents, it's like a bunch of siblings who are like superpowered spies, and the oldest brother kills anyone who gets close to the youngest sister. The protagonist of this is like someone that's gone to school with the younger sister since he was a kid, who gets too close, and the older brother tries to kill him. But in order to save him, the younger sister offers our protagonist her hand in marriage, and they wear rings. And now that they're married, the older brother has to protect his brother-in-law. It's stupid. It's stupid. I don't think I need to read any more of that. But look, maybe a few months from now, everyone will be like, hey, it actually got good, and I'll check it out more. So that is it. That is a whole bunch of comic talk for you. Sorry for the wait. I've already got 3 more weeks of comics that I have to catch up on. So if enough of you, you know, remind me to record episodes of Serious Issues, maybe you'll get the next episode significantly earlier than this one. Thank you so much for listening. Again, that group is facebook.com/groups/Serious Issues Podcast. I'm at LevDog on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want more from me, not necessarily comic book talk, but sometimes I sneak some in, I do a weekly podcast called Hey Fam with Angus Truscott, which is all about movies and video games and TV shows and sometimes comic books. Certainly comic book movies and comic book TV as well. It's very silly, a lot of comedy, a lot of dick talk. If that's the reason you like Serious Issues, then you'll love Hey Fam. I have a weekly indie games podcast. It used to be monthly, now it is weekly. Like a podcast called All the Small Games that I record with Jonathan Valenzuela, and it's all about indie video games, and that's heaps of fun too. I just recorded an episode this week about my favorite game of the year so far, which is called Blasphemous. So yeah, check out Hey Fam and All the Small Things, and check yourselves out in the mirror. You look great. See you next time, everybody.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.